This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week 581, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 581. I'm Josh Flanagan, along with my co-host Ron Richards.
Good morning.
And Connor Kilpatrick has, in fact, joined the French Revolution.
The resistance, yeah. We're not quite at revolution yet, but
I just filled that in. I thought revolution because I know more about that. And I like that he's like with the Jacobins.
Yes, he's got a beret. He's all set. He's got a baguette and a gun. He goes by the name Chocolat. And yeah, so there you go.
It's one of those, I can see the gun.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
As and a really thick muzzle.
And the black and white striped shirt and the scarf around the neck.
So just every baseline
trope.
Stereotype that you can think of. Smoking. Just, oh, the smoking and the butter. Smoking and the butter. That's what Connor is doing. Really. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us reads their favorite book. It's early for me, and that never happens because they were usually on the West Coast, so you're going to have to bear with me. I'm not good in the morning, and Connor didn't used to be good in the morning, and then we started doing the shows in the morning, and he's fine.
He got good. He got better. He evolved.
Here I am lagging.
That's part of the reason why he got recruited for the French Resistance. They're like, this guy, not only is he big and bald, but he's good in the morning.
Monsieur Kilpatrick, le bon le morning, le matin.
I remember. We read the books. One of us picks their favorite. We call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick. And if we have time for the mail or shenanigans and whatnot, then we'll get to that also. The goal here is entertainment and amusement.
Yes.
And maybe some actual thought in there, but I can't promise that. There will be spoilers, though. I can promise you that much because this is a review show, and any other way to do it would be just absurd. You know that, and we're going to move ahead. Ron, you had the pick.
Yes, I did, and this was a solid week. This was a week where I read a bunch of books, and I was like, wow, that was really good. That was really good. Not all of them we're going to talk about, because some of them were just good.
Yeah.
But, you know, but like, it was, I had very little to, well, I always got something to complain about, but I had very little to.
That's not true.
Yeah. But making this pick was really, I had a lot of different options, but ultimately, what blew me away and also blew our patrons away as we get a, once again, a joint iFanboy pick of the week and iFanboy patron pick in one shot. Nick Fury, number one, written by James Robinson with art by Akko, A-C-O. I'm going to say Akko.
I don't know, but.
Yeah, Akko.
Sign that guy up.
Inked by Hugo Petrus, colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. And
I believe Hugo Petrus is also in the French Resistance.
I think so, too. That's a great name, by the way, Hugo Petrus. And I wanted to call out Hugo Petrus and Rochelle Rosenberg because, all right, listen, James Robinson is a known quantity, right? We are very familiar with James Robinson and his mastery of comics writing. He's one of the best, right? Hands down. Nick Fury, now this is new Nick Fury. This is, you know, the hashtag not my Nick Fury character.
Well, you know, in a world where the actual Nick Fury is what it is.
Yes.
Fine. I'll take this.
Well, no, but the thing is that I surprised myself by picking this because historically I am very anti hashtag not my Nick Fury. I felt as if this character was another example of, you know, a not so transparent attempt at synergy by Marvel, and one of those like Connor and I talked when you weren't on the show a couple of weeks ago, which is going to be a theme of this episode. But Connor and I talked about the Champions and how Marvel is really trying to force the Champions down our throat, and it's just like relax, like don't stop trying to make the Champions happen. And for a while there's the same thing with Nick Fury. They were just trying to make Nick Fury happen, and I wasn't buying what they were selling. But then you get James Robinson and this Akko guy and Hugo Petrus and Rochelle Rosenberg come in and knock my socks off.
Now you're literally selling what they're selling.
I'm literally selling what they're selling. Now, I looked up this Akko artist, and he's been working at DC. Like, he's been around most recently, mm-hmm. as recently as this year on Midnighter and Apollo. He was on Deathstroke.
Midnighter and Apollo was good.
Yeah, it was good. Now, the thing is, I was looking at his art on that, and I could see some hints of what happened here in Nick Fury. But if this is an example of editorial getting someone with talent and saying, hey, man, here's a writer who wants to push the boundaries, go nuts, then this is more of what we need in comics. Right. And because what we got, and I don't know if it's the combination of Akko plus Hugo Petrus, I think huge, huge kudos go to Rochelle Rosenberg for coloring the shit out of this issue. But what you got was something that was very in the Marcos Martin, David Aja category of style. Right.
But. Yeah. But with other stuff. I felt like this was like a lot of times you can look at somebody and say, Oh, they're just doing this guy. And I was like, oh, he definitely implemented this guy, and he implemented this guy, but there's something else, and there's another, you know, influence.
And I think it's the alchemy of James Robinson writing a great script and doing what he does and pushing Akko with the layouts. And I would love to see what James Robinson handed Akko to draw here, right? Mm-hmm. And then something happens with Akko's art and working with Hugo Petrus and Rochelle Rosenberg that made it not look like anything he's done at DC. Mm-hmm. You know, because and I think this, you know, kind of highlights what DC does to their artists in terms of mandating a house style or just a look of DC books. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you put this page to page up against his Deathstroke work, it is night and day. Right. Mm-hmm. And instead, what we got here was, you know, several double page spreads that were just immensely detailed and like insanely complicated.
And as a digital reader, I hate double page spreads, but I had to be like, all right, well done.
Yeah, no, exactly. And now the thing is, like, when I saw the cover, so the cover was just a stark blank white background with hashtag not my Nick Fury standing there colored in magenta, but with old 1960s Steranko Nick Fury covers superimposed on his body. And at that moment, I'm like, oh, come on, James Robinson, you're better than this. Don't try to do a Steranko, you know, like, don't try to replicate what has been done before. Do something new. Mm-hmm. And I got to admit, I underestimated him because what he did was he channeled the vibe and the feel of those Steranko 60s books, but with a modern take on it and with his own kind of take on it. And it did not feel like an also-ran. It did not feel like a callback. It did not feel like an homage. It felt like in the spirit of, which is that's how you do it right.
I would also like to go ahead and give a shout out to Travis Lanham, the letterer on this. Yeah. And if you look, this thing, to be a letterer and hand her this, you're like, oh, this is going to take me longer than the other books.
Right.
There's sound effects all over the place.
Yep.
There's a splash page. It's actually a single page spread of the flying Ferrari going around a lighthouse on a rock, and there's this big boom with stars that we're sort of looking through like an arch. That's great.
The lettering, and again, Rochelle Rosenberg with the coloring, a very kind of, very bright pastel kind of pop modern art kind of color palette. And this is a single thing. I mean, this is, of course, launching the new series, but this issue is basically a casino caper. You know, where Nick Fury arrives at a casino and on the French Riviera, and there's something going on with Hydra, and it's got a little Ocean's 11 kind of vibe, but then it gets, kind of Bond spy-y. We get the flying car, we get a boat, and there's just some... There's a single page, full page splash page of Nick Fury walking into the casino, and he's wearing a stark blue suit. And the background behind him is pink and magenta, and you've got chips and cards flying around him, right? As he's made his entrance into the casino, and it was just like and that followed three double page spreads that really kind of laid the groundwork and saw like he walked into the room, he saw what was going on, he had his little spy watch that took care of a bunch of things, and boom, here's the man. And you know what? Now I'm buying this character.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And honestly, like I've been railing a lot privately, and I probably will on the show, about the state of comics and what can be done, and mainly Marvel and DC, specifically within art and stuff like that. And this shows me that Marvel can make a great comic book still.
I don't think there's any shortage of examples of that.
Yeah. I think it's few and far between, unfortunately, these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but like it's constant. It's always there. It's never like there's not a couple of good books where.
Right.
Anyways, we'll get to that.
Yeah, but this just knocked my pants off. So great job. Bravo, James Robinson. Bravo, Akko. Bravo, Hugo Petrus. Bravo, Rochelle Rosenberg. Bravo, Travis Lanham. I mean, this is like a masterclass in a first issue. Not even just a first issue, just a great issue.
Yeah.
And way to turn me around on a character. I'm now fully on this book. So so ratings. It's a patron's pick, so we got to do the ratings, Josh. So
ratings. 4.
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Okay.
And I'm only dinging it because it's the character Nick Fury.
I'm dinging it slightly because there's not much to it.
Yeah.
Like there's no character work. There's no...
None. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, there's no story really.
It's an opening scene.
It's a cold open of a Bond movie.
Yeah, exactly.
So. And it's impressive to have it transported into this medium, basically.
Yeah, agreed.
I thought that was done really well. And I just... The design of it is really the win right there, and sort of that hearkening back to Steranko, but being modern and having all these influences that are just sort of on the tip of your tongue, but without feeling derivative.
Yep. Sticking with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great job. Yeah.
I picked it up for James Robinson, and I got a lot more.
That's a great slogan. I picked it up for James Robinson, and I got a whole lot more.
Well...
All right, so moving on, Marvel's, now I just thought that this book was in stark contrast to this week actually was the start of Marvel's next big event, which is the Nick Spencer-helmed Secret Empire event, which is spinning out of the pages of Captain America Steve Rogers, which, as we all know, and we talked about this, Josh, when you weren't on the show 2 weeks ago, the whole idea, the Nick Spencer story that Steve Rogers has been manipulated by the little girl who's the Cosmic Cube. And
I read that story.
Yeah, and they change it so that he's been raised as an agent of Hydra since his childhood. And what you missed on the show when Connor and I were there, we're talking about it, was the last issue, is that I've been reading every issue of Captain America Steve Rogers.
Have you?
I have, because I love that Nick Spencer is challenging the readers and making people go bananas.
Like I agree with that.
Like, I love that. So I'm like, I want to see what the deal is. And I like how the story has been developing. This is the right time to have it come to a head, because it's kind of been long in the tooth at this point.
Yeah.
And I thought that Secret Empire number 0 was a great, this really could have been a first issue. Like, I don't know why it's a 0 issue. You had a prologue by Rod Rees, and then which kind of took you back in time to when Captain America in World War II, the Hydra stuff, kind of laid a little more of the groundwork. And then it goes to the present day, where Steve Rogers makes his move, and basically as the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., they've got a confluence of, they've got, the Chitauri are attacking in space, and a bunch of Baron Zemo's leading a bunch of villains attacking New York. And at the same time, Hydra's mounting an attack, and so the government panics and gives all power of the military to Captain America, and that's the moment where he flips the switch and Hydra takes over. And I thought that was a great swerve. It was a great move. It was a great way to kick things off. Daniel Kuna is fantastic. The art is great. Based on this issue, I am all in, right? But then I go and read Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 16, and it's literally the sound of air being deflated from a balloon. Because this is the problem I talked about the last issue of Captain America.
Well, not literally.
Yeah, not literally. You build this great kind of base of what's going on, and then you go to the Captain America book, and it's got three artists, one is awful, one is okay, and the other one is pretty good, you know? But the art is inconsistent. It's not as bad as the last issue of Captain America, Steve Rogers, number 15, which was just like, that made me question what the hell is going on at Marvel. Like, the art quality on issue 15 was, like I said to Connor, if I got that book when I worked at Image as like a submission, I would have rejected it out. We would have rejected it outright just based on the art alone. And I can't believe that Marvel published it. Right. And it's just so like, the only thing that's going to mar this event for me is just that inconsistency. Is that, you know, like, and that I think is the big problem, is that whether, you know, this kind of race to pump, you know, two books out a month, you know, the books suffer for it. I really believe. So, and it was just a real stark balance between Ooh. Secret Empire number 0, which I enjoyed, and Daniel Kuna was great, and then to go read Captain America, Steve Rogers, and have inconsistent art, the art that was in there looking amateurish, deviant art level art, right?
I'm looking through it. I see some of it.
Oh, it gets worse as you go through the issue.
Yeah, that's kind of. Yeah. I was like, it's not so bad. And then there's a page where Cap is sitting at a desk.
Yes, I'm on that one where he's addressing the Hydra.
Yeah,
group. Yeah, right. Yeah, and then they keep on going to Selvig and the gun, and when and then the guy, the suicide bomber, and it's just like the page with Captain Marvel and somebody in the lower left hand corner, somebody working at his workstation in front of her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like it's mind boggling.
Yeah,
I don't understand how you can have your most important event have that, you know. So
yeah, I guess they didn't. I mean, it's the same choice that DC's making, and it's a different solution. Actually, right. It's not a different solution. It's you know, the deadline is the most important, getting that out there, right, to them.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm going to read it because I like the story and I want to see what goes on. I want to see what's driving people, what makes people go bananas, because I enjoy people suffering. That said, getting Akuna art, and it kind of in like what I dislike about Secret Empire number 0 is that I have no expectation that Daniel Akuna will draw another page of this. Like, I forget who's the artist in Secret Empire number 1, but I'm pretty sure it's not Akuna. And then it's like, oh, well, crap, you know, so.
He's so good. What's he been doing? I feel like I haven't read his stuff.
He does one issue here and there. He hasn't done a real a real run in a while. I mean, it seems to be mainly Marvel stuff. But, you know, looking at his recent stuff, at least as I pull it up in Comic Book DB, you know, he and then my browser freezes.
He was pretty consistent on Uncanny Avengers.
I'm sorry. He's been doing Captain America Sam Wilson, which I'm not reading.
Oh, me neither.
Yeah, he's been on that
thing
monthly.
About that.
Yeah,
is that I didn't really have a big problem with the story. I just kind of didn't. I wasn't that invested in it, so I stopped reading them.
Right.
Like I'd read up through the Cosmic Cube Girl, and I read the first bits of the Hydra stuff, and the first bits of Sam Wilson. I read Sam Wilson for a while, actually.
Yeah.
I just wasn't super interested in it, so I stopped reading it.
So then that leads us over to DC, which has launched their next big event, which I am going to, regardless if it's good or bad, I'm going to apologize in advance to anyone involved in it. I'm going to make fun of it because it's called The Button. And I'm sorry. The Button.
Right, the Button.
So with Batman number 21, we get The Button Part 1, which is the Batman, Flash, Watchmen, you know, picking up the thread that Geoff Johns left in Rebirth a year ago now, close to a year ago.
Something like that.
Yeah. This is written by Tom King with art by Jason Fabok.
Connor says it. Fabok.
For a moment, I didn't realize it was Jason Fabok, and I thought, I'm like, are we getting Gary Frank? But it, it's, oh, not, I can see it's, that. It's not Gary Frank. Before we talk about the book itself, great Tim Sale cover, which is only marred by him drawing the Flash's costume with the dumb lightning bolt lines on his head. And that, like, if it didn't have those two lines, it would have been a great costume.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, a great cover. But so what did you think of his Batman? What do you think of the button? Chapter one, part one.
I actually really liked it.
I did too.
I was like, I mean, like, everything about this, I shouldn't like it, but there's a couple of things that are happening. First of all, Fabok,
Let's say Fabok.
I like how that feels.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, they're aping Watchmen, nine panel grids.
Yes.
This sort of style and pacing of it.
Mostly nine panel grids. Every now and then they break out to do either a double page splash or a break out of the grid for him.
If you're a Tom King reader, that's not unusual. He's a nine panel grid guy.
Yep.
Like, I've seen that a lot. And so he's got a pretty good mastery of it. Second of all, I mean, Tom King's very good.
Yes.
And I had no expectations of this. I didn't really know it was coming. I got to the page where the button is all over the monitors.
Yeah.
And I kind of was like, oh.
Right.
Oh, that, like, this is actually a thing that's happening now. Because it's funny, because they left that breadcrumb forever ago, and I kind of forgot about it.
Right.
And then I really just like the device of Flash's, I'll be there in a minute, and then reverse Flash shows up, and every panel is a second.
Yep.
And I was like, that's really good. And so it was this really interesting fight sequence that took place second by second, almost like 24 done in comic book terms.
Yep.
And it was really well done. And I was like, and I got to the end and I was like, I want to know what's going to happen. It was a great last page with the Flash showing up, you know.
Late, as always.
I mean, like technically, sort of, you know, craft-wise, this was extremely well executed.
So now, yeah, and now I agree with all that, and I actually did find myself liking it, but with with asterisks and caveats, right?
Sure.
So first off, like, there's, aside from it being the button, and say what you will about Watchmen in DC or anything like this, I think that Tom King did do a great job on the script. I think it's great, you know. I think it's, I just don't know why Jeff Johns isn't doing this. You know, and I know why, and I get, because he's got bigger and better things, right? And he wrote Rebirth, and they planted this little seed, and it just, it irritates me to no end that he comes back, does this little thing, and then runs away, right? And, you know, and there's been a lot of talk about the, you know, most recently this week, you know, this past week in the comic industry, there's been talk about, you know, there's been some opinion about the lesser value of artists by one publisher, and then another publisher just made a big announcement, you know, kind of building a line of books around artists and all this sort of stuff. And it just kind of punctuated kind of what is wrong with the majority of the comic book industry right now, which is that there's a wide birth of talent, and not the age of, like, we talk about, is the age of writers over, and do we need to bring back the prominence to artists and all this sort of stuff. But I think most off is that the age of names are over, in that you put a name on a book and it will sell for the most part. You know, like, you put Bendis on a book and it doesn't sell like what it used to, right? It just is what it is. But I truly believe that you put Jeff Johns on a book to do a big event like this and it'll still sell like gangbusters. Mm-hmm. Right. And it'll still do great. And while I think Tom King did do a great job on this, I feel like this should be Jeff's story. This should be what he's doing. Specifically in the book, there's the juxtaposition of, there's a hockey match going on,
mm-hmm.
and Batman has it open on his screen. And I just don't buy that. Batman doesn't care about the hockey game.
I thought there was a thing. Yeah, but
and I get it as a device and how it, you know, it's the hockey fight, and it mirrors the fight that goes on between Reverse Flash and Batman. And there's also a sequence of nine panel grid where Batman is rolling the comedian's pin across his knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't. I mean, Connor would be better to speak from a Batman standpoint, but I feel like that's very out of character.
I did bump on that. I noticed that. The hockey thing doesn't bother me because he is Batman. And he has to watch out for criminals and terrorism, so it would make sense to monitor that thing.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. He would do that.
He would have that on one of the screens because it's a relevant thing. He's got a lot of Gotham there.
So from a story point standpoint, the kind of the Deus Ex Machina is that the comedian's pin falls next to Psycho Pirate's mask, and a bolt of lightning then comes. They kind of sync up with each other, and a little bolt of lightning hits Batman, and for a moment he sees his father from the Flashpoint universe, and that kind of opens the door for Reverse Flash to come in from Flashpoint. And that's what kind of triggers everything off. A little convenient, like unexplained, but whatever. That's comics. We'll go with it. I thought that the Reverse Flash gray character, the fight sequence per second was just really masterful. It was really, really quality. I finished the issue going, all right, cool, I'm in. You know, like I'm definitely gonna read this. But it just frustrates me. And like nothing against Tom King or Jason Fabok, but if this was Geoff Johns and Gary Frank, this probably could have been pick of the week, and I imagine it would be huge. And I don't understand why they just downplay that. I don't know.
Because that's what it is now. I mean, for a long time, DC's got a much more collaborative top-down style.
Right.
And I for one think that Tom King, he's somewhat gotten out of he's found a way to make his own voice heard through that.
Right.
So I can respect that. And, you know, an editorial mandate on a large story that got started in one place and is then carried out by everybody else, that's not new.
That's Marvel's bread and butter. I mean, that's why, you know, like that's my biggest frustration. My biggest frustration with a lot of the upcoming writers now is that they really, you get the sense that nobody's writing their story, that aside from Scott Snyder. I'll give it to Scott Snyder. You know, Scott Snyder is the one who really puts a lot of himself in what he's doing because he can, because he's earned it, right? Because he's gotten to that point. But it's more so at Marvel, less so at DC, but in this case, it definitely feels it. But the at Marvel, it's like, no, this is what you have to do now. Go do it. And the writer goes like, okay, and then does it, you know, and like that, maybe that's why I liked Nick Fury so much more, because I didn't get that feel. I didn't get the feel like this was a editorial mandate, like James Robinson just said, I'm going to do something in the vein of Steranko and I'm going to run with it, you know?
But those books are niche books, the ones that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I feel like the industry is bifurcated into, there's the workaday stuff, There's the company jobs, and then out of that you get some outlets to do your own thing, and that's how it is now. Because between Image and between, I'm gonna say vanity books, but it's not. That's a little more pejorative than I want it to be. But like something like the Vision that was
lower,
just done.
lower tier. Because again, I mean, yeah, like I don't want to demean the value of a book like Vision or Power Man and Iron Fist and stuff like that. But
I'm wondering, but DC doesn't seem to have much of an outlet for that kind of book, whereas Marvel does.
Right.
Trying to think of a DC book.
And it's been argued that Marvel's leaned too into that. You know, I think that's where a lot of the diversity and all this kind of the arguments about Marvel have been coming up. But like,
right.
but then Marvel rolls out this Generations announcement for this August, running from August to September, a 10-issue series, right, where they release, and it's all writers and half the books don't have artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I get.
Are we gonna do that? Are we gonna do that part now? Do we want to do that part now?
Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Good.
I was gonna say, I know how the comic book industry works. I know they need to announce stuff in advance. You need to solicit and stuff like that. But it's just like, get your shit together. You know, like no, like you know, on one hand, you know, like literally on the same day, you had DC announcing this artist-driven line of books where Jim Lee's trying to recreate Image at DC, which isn't going to work. But you've got, you know, Greg Capullo and John Romita Jr. and Adam Kubert and, you know, and folks like that rolling out these kind of big name books. And you got Marvel just doing more of the same. You know, and it's just another bunch of books that are, you know, there's Generations, which are tying in, you know, the older and younger character with a bunch of names that are uninspiring and that aren't, you know, that don't get me excited for it. And half the books don't have artists. This isn't hard. Like, I think just get good names, good people, put them on books and get out of their way. And I don't understand why Marvel is stumbling, like both companies are stumbling over themselves to do that.
See, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Okay.
Couple of reasons. One, this fake writers versus artists thing.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
That needs to stop.
Agreed.
I'm just reading like the press releases or whatever where you've got John Romita Jr. saying that Marvel isn't focusing enough on the artist and it's costing them sales. I'm like, why are you doing that? That's horrible.
Yeah.
There are good creators.
Some of the stuff Capullo said at that panel, which get me wrong, Capullo is a firebrand, and when you put a mic in front of him, you got to just get out of the way, but still.
Yeah, I know, it's wrestling, and I get that, but I actually think it's harmful, because the fact is there are good creators, and sometimes one kind of person drives the book, and when sometimes another kind of person drives the book. Warren Ellis sells the book. It doesn't matter who's right, who's drawing on it. It doesn't.
Right.
Warren Ellis did the book. Jim Lee is on a book. It doesn't matter who's writing it.
Yep.
There's creators who attract fans, and each of them bring different things. So if for some reason Marvel's doing some event and it was a writer-driven thing where they came up with it, I don't care. Right. They're not soliciting it yet. They're not soliciting it without artists. They're just saying this thing is coming because they're trying to stay ahead of the curve, and it's just whatever. I find if you don't pay attention to that part of it, it doesn't affect – because in the end, I'm really only looking at what comes out on a given week, and I look at who's writing, who's drawing.
Right, and I totally agree with you with all of that. But the thing is that there is a – going back to my argument about Captain America, and that is not alone in a lot of Marvel books. The quality of art in Marvel books have gotten disturbingly low, right? And the thing is that they're good people. And it was funny because I was having this conversation with another friend of ours who works in the industry, and he's like, "All right, he's like, so what do they do? Where's the talent? Where are the good people?" I'm like, "I don't know. I wish I had that answer. You know, if I had, you know, but." You know, but I do know that, you know, you get, I mean, like we're ripe for Grant Morrison to come back from Heavy Metal Land. Right. And but then I don't know if that would even move the needle anymore. Like weird, we're in such a weird place right now.
I don't think it would. I think that things have changed. Yeah. You and I are not the audience right now.
Right.
So we are going to get excited about niche things and interesting things. But, you know, the main thrust of sort of what's happening at Marvel proper.
Right.
It's not interesting.
Right.
It hasn't been for a long time for lots of reasons. But those sort of fringy side books, there's a lot of good stuff happening there. I still continue to believe that, like, if you're going to talk about quality of art and who they're willing to let do books and do interesting work, Marvel's main, you know, mainstream basic Marvel has the edge there by a great deal, because there's that DC house style thing.
Yeah. Let's
be honest. They're doing this line. They want a lot of people who draw like Jim Lee.
Yeah. Yep.
That is their thing, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, and I never have. And, it, you know, so like that's what they're going for. It's less, there's good work being done, but overall, I find there's more of those little offshoots and eccentricities that ACO, ACO, whatever, AMCO, yeah. stuff like that, or stuff like Sanford Green on Power Man and Iron Fist, or even what's happening in a book like Ms. Marvel. There's more risks being taken to let those kind of talents sort of grow up, whereas over at DC, it's a plug and play system.
Yeah,
it's a lot of guys from all over the world who are sort of nondescript.
Yeah,
they're doing the job.
And then the problem then is that somebody comes out like Otto Schmidt on Green Arrow, who's a standout, and you're like, yes, this. And then because Green Arrow is on a double shipping, whatever, we don't get consistency. And it's just
we talked about this. Yeah, this double shipping, this bi-monthly thing, that is harmful to the artist.
Yep.
It does not allow somebody to build up momentum.
And I'll predict now that when this DC, whatever, what did they call it? Dark Matter line. The moment
I just made the jerk off motion with my hand. By the way,
yeah, I know that whole marketing of this was just ridiculous. This masterclass and dark, like, it was so mixed. It was so full of mixed messages. And I wasn't in the panel. I wasn't in the presentation. Maybe it made more sense. But even reading about it in the press that officially wrote about it versus the people that were there and that were posting about it on Twitter, it just sounded like such a mixed bag of smoke and mirrors and marketing speak and all this sort of stuff to try to get you excited for something. And it just, you know, and the thing is, the moment one of those books ships late, it's going to be a feeding frenzy again, you know, because that's how it goes, you know. And like, and so I don't know, I'll be curious to see what it goes. I want to read those books. I like the idea that DC wants to do new things.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like, that's cool, you know. But you know, I'm sorry, but you know, Jim Lee and James Tynion on the Immortal Man, I'm more excited by the idea of doing something new than by the people who are doing it, you know.
That's not new.
Anyway, but whatever, we can just rant and rant. But the thing is that there are still masters in this industry who I think could put together great books, and one of those continues to be Kurt Busiek.
I honestly think the solution is to hire Kurt Busiek to write your entire line, but under various pseudonyms, make them sound like British names you have never heard of. You would have. I'm serious. If you didn't put his name on it, people would. Oh, that guy's been around forever. Because, like, to people now, he must be like like Roger Stern was to us.
Right, yeah. But you the thing is that does he have an older sensibility? Or if he, let's say he did that, we say, we take Kurt Busiek, we say, do what you do great, we're going to do it under a different name, does it still connect with modern audiences? I think so. I think he gets the chemistry of what makes comics work.
I'm reading Autumn Lands, and that doesn't seem to me like, oh, this guy's been doing comics since the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, like he's got the range. He can do the different voice. It's like Mark Waid can kind of do the same thing.
Yeah, I put Mark Waid and Kurt Busiek definitely in the same category. But goddamn, yes. Astro City number 43 was great.
It was really good.
It was really great. We finally find out this is a single issue. We finally find out about the gentleman.
You know, I flipped onto that page with the gentleman, and that is an image that I haven't seen in a while, and it's so iconic for this series. Yeah. I think of the Alex Ross cover. And as soon as I flipped to it, I went, oh, the gentleman. And then I saw the word and I was like, oh, it's right. I remembered. And I go, who drew this? And I was like, oh, it is Brent Anderson. Everything was perfect right there on that page.
It's perfect. And this is kind of a weird take on Shazam-esque, kind of. I don't know. I mean, there's a little girl whose father died. Okay. And somehow she can so her father dies and he's a larger than life kind of, you know, 1940s man, right, with the cut chisel jaw, and we find out that she's actually making him manifest and as the gentleman, and that's the hero. And it's just a real touching story done in a real fourth wall breaking manner, right? Because we have the Sandman, Purple Man kind of guy who started telling the story, but then the little girl breaks in and starts talking to us directly and tells the story about the gentleman. We get the bouncing beatnik who we haven't seen for a while, who I love. and yeah, I mean, it's just Astro City is just perfect.
I also really like the snake villain thing.
Yeah, yeah, the Serpentor.
Like, yeah, that wasn't quite. It is exactly Serpentor, isn't it? But like, yeah. he was actually trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but nobody understood him, and he still screwed up. And
I would classic. If you make Kurt Busiek editor in chief at Marvel, I think that would make things better. I agree.
Absolutely.
I agree. Because I think he could do it. And I don't know how he has health issues, but
he should do it like Roy Thomas did.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Just give it to him.
Yep.
And it's fine if his name is the problem. I have a fake name.
So change it. Yeah. Let's get creative, comics. Come on.
It's true. I, you know.
We're talking about another master, right?
It was really great. Yeah. Oh, we had a new Hellboy issue.
Yep.
And what was interesting about this, I have to get to it. I'm sorry, just a moment. It's a one-issue story, one and done, Into the Silent Sea. And for me, the story here was Gary Gianni,
yeah.
The art on it. It's all this like sort of woodcutty, pencil-y, line-based stuff, sort of very scratchy and old, like you would see. It all takes place on an old whaling ship, basically, or something like that. Or maybe it was a warship, but either way, an old boat with sails. And it looks like sort of the woodcut art that you would see, you know, from the late 1800s.
Wow.
And so Hellboy shows up, and it's Dave Stewart. So everything is gray and greenish, except for Hellboy, who is in red. And Hellboy shows up on the ship, and the people on the ship freak out because he's a big demon. So they tie him up. And in the meantime, there's all these other mysteries going on. Basically, everybody dies.
Okay.
And then you kind of find out that Hellboy is like traveling through purgatory. He's on his own.
Jeez.
And nothing really. But it's beautiful. It has got a really fun. It's a Hellboy story.
Right.
You know, like a bunch of stuff goes around, and Hellboy kind of watches it, and his thing is like, you're making a bad decision here. And then everybody gets killed, and he's like, well, crap. And then he swims off on his own. It's just like,
well, crap.
The formula is not, it doesn't vary very much. Yeah. And there's a bunch of sea monsters, too, that sort of come up at one point and kill everybody, like giant crabs. And I mean, if I was this artist, like, I'd imagine this is about the best thing I've had to draw in a long time. It was just really fun. And if you're like me, I think when they said Mignola has retired from Hellboy, which I guess he didn't. I don't really know. Or they just put Mignola's name on everything anyway. I a little bit of me went, all right, Hellboy's still going on. I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
But they're still here and they're fun and they're worth reading.
That's all that matters.
Good stuff. And it looks so good.
Yeah. Cool.
If you just didn't even read it and you just flip through it, it's super fun.
All right, we got a couple more comics to talk about before we get on. I want to thank everybody for helping support iFanboy.com. And if you're listening, and there are thousands of you listening who are currently not helping support iFanboy.com, we're talking to you. Head over to iFanboy.com/support. There you can find a link to shop at Amazon, where all your Amazon purchases go through like normal, but then a little bit comes to us from Amazon, not from you. Nothing leaves your pocket. In fact, I saw recently, I really need to go follow up and thank them, but a comic book store posted and said that all of their Amazon purchases go through our iFanboy link to help us out. And that's just amazing. And that's awesome.
So, it's interesting for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a common, I know a lot of comic stores, you know, when Diamond shorts them, sometimes Amazon is the solution.
Comic shops are somewhat in competition with Amazon sometimes.
Right,
so
yeah, it's a whole thing, but anyway, say
we're going to challenge, we're going to funnel it through a comic book site. That's rad.
Yeah. So, thank you for doing that. And please, you know, anybody, you know, a lot of us shop at Amazon, using that link helps us out in the process. If you want to help us directly, you can go to, also on iFanboy.com/support. There's a direct link to donate via PayPal. We thank everyone who has done that. And we continue to be open for purchase from eccentric billionaires. So that's the way to do it. And then finally, head over to patreon.com/iFanboy, where you can help support us directly on a monthly basis. We got a bunch of different levels there that you can sign up at. If you sign up at a level $5 or higher, you get a bunch of cool rewards. I'm working on the next wave of patron rewards. They're going to be going out in the mail soon. So stay tuned. We've changed our next goal. We are less than $600 away from meeting it. So we need you. This is a membership drive. We need your help. If we get to our next goal, we will add another podcast on a monthly basis where we talk about something non-comics media. Like we talked about Trainspotting recently. We'll talk about a movie, TV show, book, record, who knows. Similar to our all media wrap up at the end of the year, but on a monthly basis. And so that's good. That will be thanks to you.
Can you guys get on that?
Yes, please, because we really want to do it. But and then also the t-shirt shop is imminent. Our t-shirt store is going to be launching very, very soon. I'm just waiting for the final samples to come in so I can approve them, and then we will be in good shape. So stay tuned for that, and we will let you know when those are live. And you can, we got a wave of new t-shirts for you, thanks to the patrons who helped us meet that goal. So patreon.com/iFanboy. We thank you for your support.
If I may, the people at home need to realize, like, you guys were super concerned with making sure the shirts were good.
Yeah.
You weren't going to put up a thing and not check.
Yeah.
That's the only part we're waiting on. Yep. That's commitment. I'm not even taking credit for that. I'm just impressed by it.
Yeah. I wish it could have gone quicker, but we're working. We're working at it. So. All right, so moving on, Black Hammer number 8 continues just the specialness of this book by Lemire and Dean Ormston. This is I like the new format if it's going to be this arc, but where we're seeing each issue is showing us each member of the team, how they were before they were in the town, and then parallel story with how it is now. In this particular case, we got to see the little girl who's the old woman trapped in a little girl's body. We got to see more about her story. She's kind of like a Mary Marvel, kind of Shazam kind of character. Gave us more depth to her. I just love this book. It's perfection. So
I just wanted to talk about I Hate Fairyland number 12.
Normally this is me who talks about I Hate Fairyland.
It is true, but here's what I'm going to talk about. A, it was super fun, and there were samurai pages, and yeah. I assume those were really fun to draw with like double page spreads with wide panels and speed lines, and those were really cool. I just liked the last paragraph of the letters page on the end.
Yes.
I know this isn't Remender's deep, dark matter about being a dad or being a sad dad or being sad about dad. It's not Hickman's fake IRS tax returns with a bunch of circles inside other circles and a triangle or two just for good measure. And that made me laugh more than anything I read this week.
Yeah, Scotty.
And that's the only reason I brought that up.
Scotty's pretty funny. It is a great issue. I love what he's doing.
It was a really fun issue too. Yeah. It was really fun.
And also I like in that back banner piece how he basically is apologizing. So he's doing the free comic book day issue for I Hate Fairyland. Because of that, the next issue won't be out till June. And I had to look at the calendar. I'm like, Jesus, Scotty, it's just 1 month. Like he wrote that thing as if he was like breaking. He's like, I could hear how bad he felt about that.
Yeah.
And it just shows his commitment to this book and shipping on a monthly schedule, which should be applauded. So, put Scotty on a book at Marvel. You know what I mean? Like put him, like I would, could you imagine Scotty and Grant Morrison doing a Marvel, you know, a book like some, you know, that's what I'm talking about. Get big, like, I don't know. I could go on and on about that.
I can be honest.
Yeah.
He's not doing a Marvel book like that right now.
He's
and
not.
It's a little bit your fault.
I know, yeah, kind of is, to be honest with you. I do like I Hate Fairyland. I like that it's his, and it is my fault. I'm sorry. All right, next book, Shaolin Cowboy, Who'll Stop the Rain, number one. This was the runner-up in the patron pick, and I was already going to read it, but I wanted to make sure we mentioned it because a lot of the patrons were really big behind it. This is from Dark Horse Comics, and this is Jeff Darrow, his Shaolin Cowboy character, colored by Dave Stewart, which is always a great moment. And I don't know, you know, like, I don't know much about Shaolin Cowboy. I've read it off and on through the years. It's kind of been around, but there was a double page spread in here that was just like mind blowing, and just reminds you that Jeff Darrow.
I mean, that's Jeff Darrow.
Yeah, exactly. It just like it just, so it was great to get lost in Jeff Darrow land again. So, awesome art, amazing, fun story. But yeah, it was just the art was just amazing. So
I'm actually I didn't get to this, and I'm kind of bummed about it. I know I will. I absolutely. Yeah. And finally, I want to talk about Black Science 29, but it's difficult. But my point, because literally I was reading and I go, how is this still so good?
It's so good. It's criminal how good it is.
I mean, Matteo Scalera, there hasn't been a fill in, right?
No, there hasn't.
He's done every issue. We're 29 issues into this. Yeah. And like, it's still, the pace is just, it's breathtaking. Like,
and I'll tell you moving. What people I've seen the sales numbers. And like, more of you need to be reading this book. More of you need to pick up all the trades, get caught up, and read this on a monthly basis, because you are literally missing out on one of the best comic books on the market.
It is.
Yeah.
And you know, 29 issues in, I'm still wrapped. This is one of my favorite books. And outside of that, it's one of my favorite looking books.
Yep.
And I just I can't get over how great this is. And I don't know how you can listen to this show and not be reading this.
Right.
I don't like everybody. If everybody who listened to this show was reading this book, we would never have to worry about it going anywhere.
Yeah. There's the iFanboy challenge. We want everyone who listens to the book to go read Black Science. And I don't know how we're going to make this work, but let's do that.
Well, this goes along with Lazarus.
Yes. Yeah.
If this book goes away or Lazarus goes away, I will find you.
Yep.
And you will pay.
And here's the deal, folks. Go to our Amazon link, buy all the trades, get caught up, right? And then get current with this book. Let's see if we can move the needle on a book. That's what I would like to see. And go to your comic book store, pre-order it, do whatever, do all the things. Even if 2,000 of you do it, and there are literally thousands of you listening to this, it could make a difference and make sure that this book never goes away, because it's fantastic.
That first trade's what, $10 retail?
$9. Go do it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I do not understand why you would read comic books and not read this book.
Right.
It's that excellent. And it's so don't take it away from me.
Yep.
This is completely selfish. I want to keep reading this book.
Absolutely. So
there you go.
All right. Well, as we mentioned earlier, you could support iFanboy directly by going to patreon.com/iFanboy. And those who sign up at the $5 or higher level on a monthly basis, support structure, get bestowed a dumb superpower on them. Sometimes it's a good power. Sometimes it's a bad power. Sometimes it's an embarrassing power. Sometimes it's a handy power. We never know. Spin the wheel. We'll see what happens. Josh, you are up first.
Well, Greg Alexi is gelatinous.
Gelatinous.
At will. He does not always gelatinous. Not like he falls apart kind of thing. But if he has to drip through something slowly, Greg can do that.
All right, cool.
It's gelatinous.
Gelatinous.
Or colloidal.
All right. Damian Sherman can be in two places at once.
Whereas mine is not necessarily related to me.
Not at all.
I feel like yours is.
Maybe a little bit. But yeah, he's able to. And the thing is that it's like, it's not quite like replicating, cloning kind of thing. But it's also not quite like, I don't know how he does it, to be honest with you. I don't know if it's the Flash or whatever, but he's literally in two places. And the thing is that it's kind of like when Jean Grey got her telepathic powers. It is very hard to be in two places at once, because you listen to two people talking at the same time. You know, it can be difficult. He's got to really get disciplined and learn how to use this power. But yeah, he can be in two places at once.
That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Ralph Lee. I'm making myself laugh. Always looks good in photos.
Oh wow, that's quite the power.
Never taking a bad photo. Eyes always where they need to be. He's not blinking. He's never making that mid face. Yep. And the smile never looks forced. He just always looks good in photos.
All right, there you go.
Don't discount that.
Tom Benton can juggle anything. So whether it's apples or dump trucks, Tom Benton can juggle them. Now, if he needs to lift a dump truck to move it, he can't. It has to be in the act of juggling. So if he needs to move cars, he's got to juggle them down the street.
I want to go ahead and break down this laughter you just heard. It's a combination of, wow, I didn't expect that coming from you, and also, wow, that's really stupid, and oh my God, I'm still laughing. It's those three things.
It's the comedic rule of threes. There you go.
Yeah, so. and you definitely explained the thing I thought.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Well, if he can just lift anything, but no, it has to be in the act of juggling.
I almost spit coffee just then.
Oh, fantastic. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy. Don't miss out on getting your own superpower. It's all the rage.
All right. Oh, no.
We're going to take a couple of your questions. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Our first one comes from Carl from Boston, who says, I've been thinking about this since I started reading comics back in 1997 or so, but it really came to a head with Spider-Gwen number 18 and the newest Avengers series. I don't regularly read Spider-Gwen, but I've actually been really enjoying the crossover between Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and Spider-Gwen. And then all of a sudden, Spider-Ham is introduced. I'm willing to let comics be comics about 99% of the time, but this issue is so bad I can't stop thinking about it. In the same day, I decided to read Avengers number 5, and I'm pretty positive my brain melted, and I understood none of what was happening. This whole Kang storyline is a bunch of time travel mumbo-jumbo with no clear explanation. It's too bad because Mike Del Mundo and Mark Waid should be a great combo. So I guess my question is, how long are you willing to let the writer-artist create a confusing comic before you give up on it? Are there certain creators you give a longer leash to? Are there certain confusing plot devices you hate? Josh?
Two issues.
Okay.
It's about two. If I'm not super invested,
you'll give them two issues. I thought you had two issues.
He said, how long are you willing to go? So I'll be two issues into something. To me, you know, I've been dropping off and jumping back on for a long time. I don't care about having read a complete arc necessarily because you can always catch up. There are people, you know, there's the Grant Morrison rule or yeah. Garth Ennis
Gerard Way. Now I think you gotta he's kind of like little Grant Morrison in that, like, I gave him a long leash with some of the Young Animal stuff, and some of it's paid off, some of it hasn't.
I'm trying to think if there must be artists, you know. There's definitely artists who I think I'm reading Injection now.
Yep.
And I have been all along, and I kind of like it, but I'm mostly sticking around to watch Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair do like what is artistically the work of their careers, I think, or at least the best stuff that they've done to this point. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. I kind of like the vibe of it more than I like the story. Yeah. Greg Smallwood was doing Moon Knight for a while. And I wasn't even reading it.
I'm still reading Moon Knight. Moon Knight's been good. It's been really good.
I don't like Moon Knight. I never have, because the whole thing is hallucination half the time.
Right.
Yeah. And I can't grab onto that. But the Smallwood art was so good that I'd look at every issue.
Yeah. For me, it's not a core like two issue. Not for really. It's kind of a, there are often times where books that if I don't see it on the stands,
right,
or remember that I'm liking it, I can quickly forget about it. And then like a month goes by, I'm like, oh wait, right, I guess I dropped that. You know, like, so it's more instinctual.
I've done that. Yeah. I've done that.
I definitely get frustrated by this just makes no sense. You know, like that, and that's happening more and more. I think that was one of the things that we ran into with the patron pick a couple weeks ago, with Black Cloud number one. You weren't on the show. I told you it'd be the theme. But you know, the Ivan Brandon, Jason Latour, Greg Hinkle book. And while we love Greg Hinkle, and I'm actually a fan of Jason Latour's work, you know, in general, and Ivan Brandon's as well, there was a lot of that book was just, you know, it just didn't make sense.
Actually, you know what? I started to read that last night.
Yeah. Interesting. I'd be curious what you think of it.
I started to read it.
Right.
And I didn't finish it.
Yeah. See? Yeah. That's the problem.
And I thought, I was very excited. I was like, all right, I'm excited about 2/3 of this.
Yeah.
And
I mean, Hinkle was great. And there were moments of like, okay, I could see what they're trying to do here, but it was almost like a Rubik's Cube that was like 75% done.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out what was supposed to grab me at all.
Yeah. All right. Next email.
Matthew Moore?
I don't know. That's what he wrote. Matthew.
Okay. There's a one of his names is in parentheses. I don't know why. I don't know which one's which. Two of them are first names. Whatever. I've decided to reread Lemire's Animal Man after finishing Morrison's run, and it's quite a journey. But I noticed a name I hadn't before, Steve Pugh. His work on His work on Animal Man was pretty rough, but seeing the improvement over the years is pretty amazing. I went back to see what you guys thought, and you agreed he should have been replaced by a fill-in artist in episode 342.
Wow.
I'm gonna do some take backs. The delta of quality was pretty significant when compared to the Flintstones. Anyway, this isn't really a question. I just wanted to point out the improvement and how long ago 2012 was. Yikes! You are not kidding, Glenn Moore.
Here's my thought about this: is that there's so much to be said about the right moment, about somebody finding their right moment, and it's a right moment in their talent and development, but also in that, if you remember, we were so high on Travel Foreman on that Animal Man run. Yeah. I think anybody who followed Travel Foreman, we were going to be hard on because we just wanted Travel Foreman. And also, that was, you know, 5 years ago, and clearly Steve Pugh's been, you know, he's now doing great work on the Flintstones. A lot of times it's the right book, the right writer, the right artist, the right time, and that just wasn't his time.
I don't think he was new then. I think he'd been around for a while. He's a vet. And I really think it is a matter of the whiplash of styles.
Yeah.
That had to do with it more than anything else. He's definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around since you know, '88.
Long time.
Yeah, totally.
Long time. So you know, at that point, you remember DC is. They just sort of put somebody on a book. Yeah. They don't seem to care if the style changes from one to the other. But with that book, it's funny because in the New 52, DC was doing that kind of thing where they had somebody like Travel Foreman and they would allow, you know, every once in a while they'll allow art to be experimental, but it's so rare for them.
Yeah, yeah, so rare.
And yeah, but 2012 was so long ago. Also, before you said hard on.
I did. Thank you, Josh, for pointing that out. I just think just generally, you know, it goes to show that, you know, we might criticize an artist today, and that doesn't mean in a year, 2 years, 5 years, we're not raving about them now. Like, that's the great thing about comics is that you see somebody up and coming. You go back and look at Frank Quitely's early work, and it is not, you know, like, it is not good, right? And then it's not like somebody who was gifted from the get-go. And then, you know, you reach up to the apex and those X-Men work, and you're just like, oh, God, look what this guy, because that guy worked at it. That's, you know, like, the thing about art is that it's actually, I mean, the thing about art is it's visual. But, I mean, you know, like, we see writers evolve and get better over time and kind of have ups and downs, that sort of thing. But with art, you actually can see the development, and it's really...
You know what's funny about writers is that I will read something by somebody new and not like it, and I kind of check them off, like, well, I don't have to pay attention to that.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier for an artist to make that comeback because you can look at it and just see the improvement right there. Watch a Steve Epting or something like that if you want to look at his whole career, or the first two albums by Spoon.
Like, that's a great example. Like, we went bananas for Steve Epting on Captain America, and I remember we were at the con when I found an old issue of Avengers from the 90s that Steve Epting drew, and it's two different guys.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I mean, it's the same guy, but it looked like two different guys.
Or the work of a young Gordon Gekko.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so if you got a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Be sure to let us know your name, where you're from, and how long you've been thinking about that question. And also, if you want, you can send an MP3 with some audio, and we got a couple of those in. We didn't get to them this week, but we're going to get to them next week, so thank you. So please keep those coming. All right, so Josh, what else we got there for the people?
Well, if you want to go back in the podcast feed, as it were, you're going to see the show that Ron and I did. We were talking about T2 Trainspotting because we had to. And that is a teaser for the next Patreon goal, the all media show kind of thing that we will do on a regular basis. And we will do that about other things. We will not talk about those first two Spoon albums. But
I talk about their latest one because it's actually interesting.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, okay. We could discuss.
See?
Yep,
see?
There you go.
So. Right there.
So go check out Trainspotting. I had so much fun on that show, and glad to hear so many people enjoyed it. We've also got there's some comics media out there that we need to talk about. Iron Fist is still lingering on Netflix. I'm really gonna watch it at some point. We're finished
still
watching.
Not started.
No, I started, but then I gotta finish it. But maybe I should be able to dive in this week. Also, we're gonna keep our eye out for Wilson, the Woody Harrelson book that was based on a Daniel Klaus graphic novel. Missed it in the theaters, but we're gonna get it in digital release and do a podcast about it. But then the big one that's coming up, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, is opening May 4th, and it's time for us to start figuring out what we're going to do there. But that is coming, and it should be fun. I know it premiered in LA earlier this week, and it's getting good reviews, of course, because it's the latest new shiny thing. But yeah.
The best thing ever.
Right.
Head over to ifanboy.com to find the best articles ever from the past, because we're not really doing them anymore. And all of our podcasts and stuff like that, and video shows and everything we've ever did is reposited. Is that correct?
Sure. There. Reposited.
I don't know if I've ever heard that usage. Yeah. You can comment on this show or the other shows, or talk about what it is we did wrong or we did right. That's fine. You can go to Facebook.com. It's fine. You can go to Facebook.com/iFanboy, or you can follow @iFanboy on Twitter, and then you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, or, you know, tell us things and engage otherwise. And sometimes we even send out other little things that tickle our fancy. And, of course, you can follow us individually @JAFlanagan, @RonXO, and @CSKilpatrick, but that one's kind of a placeholder, on Twitter and Instagram. The Twitter is. The Instagram's not.
Yes. And
it's all in French now, though.
It's all in French, right? It's nonsense unless you're French. If you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes, write a review about it, or anywhere else that takes reviews about podcasts. Or most importantly, tell your friends. If your friends are into comics and they're not listening to iFanboy, help spread the word. We appreciate everybody who does that. You guys have really helped us grow to what we are today, and let's continue that momentum. We're changing the world one comic book reader at a time.
Black science.
Yes, exactly. So your one takeaway from this episode is to go read Black Science.
Seriously.
All right, so that's it for this show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Ron.
Je m'appelle Josh. You wake up to an empty night. Tears for two.